Before we get to this week's episode, I have some community notes. First off, thank you to everyone who said they enjoyed our conversation about A World of Darkness Mummy. We weren't sure if departing that far from Core Mage was going to be received well, and it very much was. With that in mind, we're going to continue on and talk about second edition Mummy, The Quick and the Dead for Wraith, as well as a few other books, always with an eye towards adding them to Mage, because we're still Mage the Podcast after all. I'm also eyeing Hunters Hunted 2, the Werewolf 20th Anniversary Edition Umbra book, Paranormal Investigator's Handbook, as well as a few Chronicle of Darkness books, such as World of Darkness Immortals. As a note, we will be taking off for American Thanksgiving, or the U.S. Thanksgiving, as well as for Christmas and New Year's. Sometime in February, I'm going to start preparing for my next actuarial exam, and we will go to every other week until April. Also, if you're listening before November 21st, the call for writers is out for M20 Visions and Vistas. This is the Mage the Podcast Umbra Storyteller Vault supplement that we've been kind of working on for the last year. If you'd like to participate in the project, a link to the survey is in the show notes. In addition, we will be accepting community submissions for Notable Mages, Umbral, Nightfoe, Realms, Rotes, and a few other things at a later date. Thanks so much to our generous executive producers for giving us the funds to pay for 60,000 Words, which is a revised tradition book or about the size of M20 Operative's dossier. As of now, I also have a few writers participating who haven't written for Mage in, I'm just going to say, a while, and you may recognize their names once the author list is released. Getting to the scale where we could fund a book has been one of Mage the Podcast's dreams, at least since I started, and thanks to everyone who's made that happen. With that, this week's episode is an interview with Jen Peters of Dork Tales, who does a Mage Explainer podcast called Paradox. We talk about teaching Mage to new people and how to explain it, and then I play one of Jen's recent episodes starting at about the 27-minute mark. At the end of her episode, I then read the Mage the Podcast credits. And with that, on with the show. Hi, Mage fans. This is your host, Tara Robinson, with Mage the Podcast. And our guest today is Jen Peters, who is doing what I could never do and successfully explaining Mage. Jen, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I was splendid. It's one of those things where I saw your project and it was like, how dare you do the thing that I've been thinking about for a while better than I probably would, such that it actually existed. I've come to the conclusion as an adult, the greatest insult I can ever bear is if someone sees me and sees that I've agreed to do something and knows that there is no chance I will have it done in time and just gracefully does it for me. There is nothing more offensive than somebody doing that. They could just, a string of racial epithets I would much prefer to somebody seeing my fundamental human weakness and compensating in a way that improves the world. So how dare you? Also, welcome.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome for the offense.
Yes. So this thing that has forced me to make a willpower roll, what is your project, Paradox?
Paradox is, as you said, a like Mage Explainer series. Basically, I wanted to take Mage, which I love, adore, and have been playing for about 20 years, and distill it down to the basics and then build up from there in the hopes to, you know, bring more people into Mage or even just wrap my own head around it a little bit more.
I agree with that. I recently finished up a project where I'm just like, let's see what everyone has ever said about the Umbra. And after 50,000 words on that, it's just all in my head now.
Here's the fun thing.
Yeah.
The episode that dropped today is on the Mage cosmology.
So my basic question is, what do you do with the fundamental internal inconsistency of the game? Like, my favorite one is I midway through this project, I realized that in M20, there is no way to get to the penumbra. It's just not mentioned. Astral projection, you go from the periphery straight to the high umbra and step sideways in the middle. But everyone's like, what happens when you step sideways? Oh, you go to the penumbra. How do you tackle the slipperiness, I'll say, of our shared love in game?
I say this a lot in many of the episodes where I'll explain something, how it is in M20. I might explain something, how it is in revised, because that's what I started with learning. Then I'll just basically say, but as always, it's up to the storyteller. But specifically for the episode that I released today, like being Friday the 13th, I thought it was a good theme to do the Mage cosmology. I basically had this idea that the penumbra is just where all of those other umbra realms kind of touch. And so, yeah, when you astral project, you can say you want to go to the Vulgate or anything like that. You can also kind of step sideways with mind magic and look into the penumbra part of the high umbra. Just the classic stepping sideways into penumbra / middle umbra is through spirit, right? So to me was just, this is where all of those realms touch earth and where they touch the gauntlet, I guess, before they actually touch earth. So that's kind of how I deal with it. I
fucking hate the Vidari. Anyway, how was your interview with Terry? He just cursed for 45 minutes. None of it makes it into the final episode. I wish someone had told me that. So what is your goal? It seems to be a two-part of I shall understand the game and I shall force that on others.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much the goal. I have always seen these questions in, you know, the White Wolf subreddit or on Facebook or anything like that, where somebody will ask a question and I'll be like, I have the answer to that. And the fact that people are still asking those questions means that there's space for somebody to explain Mage.
Despite the fact that we are 8 years after the launch of M20 Core.
Yeah, exactly. And also the fact that M20 Core is 700 pages long. Absolutely, M20 simplified a lot of stuff and made a lot of stuff clearer. But what new person is going to pick up a 700-page book and be like, ah, yes, this is the book I want?
And I guess this is seemingly a similar question, but slightly different. Why? Why do this to yourself? We understand the what and the intent, but you're coming up with a script, you're reading through it, you're doing the background research, you're comparing it to previous editions, and it doesn't end. Like,
no.
Anytime you're like, I want to compare these two things, you're like, well, I just look at the M20 and then I look at the revised. And then you realize, oh, this is actually touched on in Gods of Monsters and then Book of Madness revised. And then Void Engineers had an addendum on it, which actually calls back to Book of Mirrors or something like that. It's all built upon a house that seemingly Kathy Ryan and Richard Dansky built over a 3-day weekend in the late 90s. So why, Jen? Why?
Well, the short answer is I'm a masochist. I love research in general, which makes Mage just a treasure trove for me.
It wins at that.
It does win at that. I love being able to find the answer for people, even if it's a complicated one. And I wanted to do something in this space, and I wasn't really sure what until I realized that basically you're the only other Mage podcast. And well, you know, you do some great stuff. You do, you know, book reviews and interviews and all of that. You didn't really have anything like this, some sort of explaining of things. Every other, either Lore by Night does, they kind of explain some stuff, which, so I was interested in that aspect, but nobody really takes it from the, okay, here's how to play a tabletop role-playing game with D10s. They don't take it from that. They take it from assuming you know the system, sort of, and they're just adding stuff to it. So I kind of wanted to bring all of that together, and it just clicked in my head. And so here we are.
What do you think it is about Mage, though, that 8 years afterwards, people are still finding this and wandering onto the forums and saying, hey, how does transmutation work with the structure and durability system? Or just to pick a thing where you're like, duh.
Right.
Where it's overly complicated and it's the rules equivalent of stepping on a Lego in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. What do you think it is about Mage that's still pulling new people in? Because as you mentioned, we never did the explainer. I never thought there would be an audience for it. I thought it was just going to be Grognards, where this was like their third edition at minimum. And anyone who started after first edition was just going to be called new guy or something like that. As time goes on, more and more of the listenership is people where this is their second RPG.
I think there's this combination of Mage really speaking to people who want to change the shitty world we live in. And Mage allows you that. It gives you this power and this ability to change literal reality. And I think that draws a lot of people in. And then they look at the 700-page book. And yes, it's 8 years later, but they go, they're not as research focused. They just don't know where to find the information because not everything's in the core. And the core is still 700 pages long. There's this lack of, I'm going to call it institutional knowledge as well, because you get certain people. I learned from somebody who understood Mage very, very well, and he has taught me most of everything I know and everything else I got through research. But not everybody has that. And a lot of people are just finding it, being like, oh, I want to play this game, or they're seeing an actual play of something and they're like, this is really cool. That's how I kind of got this idea in my head. Was I do actual plays with Dork Tales. Kelly, who runs Dork Tales, is the one who taught me everything about Mage. But we run a Victorian era mage game. First of all, we had a brand new player to mage in that game, and we keep hitting audience members who have never heard of mage, and they're seeing this because they came to us for D&D or something, because everybody comes to watch our D&D games, but mage was something new to them. And so even with just some of the audience members who have kind of glommed onto us and volunteered time and stuff like that, I was explaining stuff to them already. So I was just like, why not just do more of this? Because obviously there are questions.
What is the process to go from this is the thing I want to explain to having that final script? Because the thing that gets me, and if I were to do this project, and one of the things that prevented me from doing something like this and why I'm so glad yours exists, is I hate the facile understanding of mage where tradition becomes character class and is your paradigm and there's nothing else. So what was key to you to get across about the setting, and what is your process to go from your recent episode where you just explained the sphere of life, where you go from this is the idea to this is the recorded thing that is now in the episode?
I try to pick, the other thing I wanted to do this with this is I wanted it very bite-sized. I wanted it people could find information on like a single thing and not have to scan through an hour-long episode to find the one nugget of information they were looking for. And so I find a very small thing, whether it's one sphere or the mage cosmology. The only reason it's small in this case is because it's an overview, and I did it specifically because the next episode is going to be the sphere of spirit and dimensional science. So I wanted to give an overview first, but take a very small idea like that. And then I try to have some sort of overview as I'm writing the script. And I want to make sure that I cover kind of what you can do with each of the sphere levels. And then I give some like example rotes. And the idea is that I twig people's creativity. I give them a slightly more focused understanding of whatever it is I'm trying to talk to them about, and then twig that creativity of like, and you can do all sorts of stuff with this sphere, or you can explore all sorts of places in the Umbra. And because mage relies so much on that, the storyteller, whatever the storyteller says goes, there's just so much room for that creativity. And that's kind of what I want to impart towards the end. And then it's kind of like, and this is what I've been talking about today. So that's kind of the end of the script. And I write that, and then I record it and edit it, put it up. With one voice, it's really easy to edit. It's nice.
You get intimately familiar with the oddities of your own voice, I imagine, at a critical point where you're like, I say buttress really weird.
Yeah, there was a time, literally less than a year ago, I could not stand watching the actual plays I was in because I hated the sound of my own voice. And then I decided to do a podcast.
As Jen mentions, the episodes in general are 15 to 22 minutes or so, with one or two that are longer. That is an indication that even, I don't know about you, I sometimes like consulting references that I think I am beyond. It firms up a bunch of things. It cements my understanding. It verifies that I'm not missing something basic. And it's kind of like getting a nice hug. Monty Cook did a book called Your Best Game Ever, or Your Best Game Yet, or something like that. And I read the entire thing just to make sure there was not some fundamental area of storytellingsmanship that I had excluded. Like, oh no, I never offered them a foot rub or something like that. Be like, we got her off of a foot rub, Terry. That's why your listenership is so limited or something like that. But you also come from a dramatic background. You've done so many Dork Tales actual plays. Yeah. How does that experience change how you either approach or explain the system?
It was really the audience from some of those actual plays that showed me that there was even an audience for something like this. Even if it was just the people who watched Dork Tales, like I could share that knowledge with some people. And also the way we were explaining to Robin, who plays Darcy in our Victorian Age game, and she was our new to mage player, that if I approach every episode like the person listening doesn't know anything about what I'm talking about, then it allows me to really get down to that basic level and build up from there, rather than making people feel either dumb or just blow past because they have no idea what I'm talking about. And obviously it doesn't matter to them, because those are two things I don't want people to do. So I'm glad that experience with actual plays and with people who have never experienced these games before allows me to bring that really down to that basic level.
Almost no mage metaphor is helpful, I've found. whenever people were yeah, it's kind of like this. No, it's not. You're just making it worse. There's like a 1 in 10 chance of it actually working out. And as you mentioned, there are a few things more humbling than having an audience for something like an actual play where you literally have to explain to the audience what you're doing. And if you don't, your listenership goes down, or you get a bunch of confused people asking you questions, both of which can be quite humbling.
I actually have experienced that myself. For the Dork Tales Patreon, I run a technocracy game. One of the comments we got, I think it was either on our episode 0 or episode 1. One of the comments I got was something about how they can't see the technocracy as anything more than the monolithic bad guy that was part of, you know, first and second edition, less so revised. And then in M20, it's like, no, they're people too. Just getting those comments is like, you're welcome to run your games and have your opinions with whatever edition you want. Absolutely. Storyteller's choice. But I do like running that game because my players are playing people who just happen to be technocrats. They're also trapped in space. So that's also fun.
That feels like it'd be the crux of that there. The stuck in space portion, as you do. What is the stumbling block that people encountered that you didn't anticipate, and vice versa? What's the thing where they're like, oh, no, I totally get that. And you're like, I had hand puppets. I thought this was going to be much more convoluted than that. But yeah, I'm glad you picked up on it immediately.
One of the biggest stumbling blocks that I didn't anticipate was the fact that so much, like, Mage allows for so much creativity. It allows for, there are rules, yes, but honestly, Mage is about breaking the rules in general. So yes, you have mechanics and yeah, you're going to be rolling dice and you're going to be counting successes and all of that. The what you want to do part is so open-ended that I didn't realize how often it would give people analysis paralysis. That, oh, I can do anything. What do I do? I don't know. And just trying to wrap their brain around that. So they often, much like rotes, often fall back on the same things again and again, without expanding for whatever situation they're in. I'd say that's more of a, like, as you're playing the game sort of stumbling block. But the running joke I have is I play in some of the D&D actual plays as well, and I keep trying to bring Mage into D&D and making, I'm like, hey, Kelly, can I do this weird thing with this spell that shouldn't be able to do this? And he goes, sure, sure, you can do that. Or no, that's insane. Just that trying to make connections bit. And maybe it's a neurodivergent thing, or maybe it's just a analysis paralysis thing where you're trying to find the one solution in the haystack of solutions that you have. I didn't really think that it would be as much of a problem as it does tend to be for some people. As for the thing that people kind of get quickly, I mean, initially, I was kind of thinking that, like, forces magic is always something people get quickly. At the very least, the basics of it. They don't necessarily grasp how deep forces magic can go when they go, oh, like fire, wind, gravity, great. Like, it's a force. I can name it. I can do something with it.
Do you feel you are held to a different standard being a lady on the internet? Do you think that there is a barrier for some people and that, like, you have to bring receipts in the form of showing your research and having done actual plays?
As much as I'd like to say no, there probably is. There's probably that barrier. I haven't found it yet, let's put it that way. But that might just be an extension of how few listeners I have so far. A few in the grand scheme of things. Like, I'm actually doing relatively well for having only been doing this since March. You know, I'm not complaining about that. But I haven't had any angry comments about how my take on time magic is bullshit and really it's this other thing from first edition. And I'm like, I don't care.
If your take is bullshit, it's because the source is bullshit, which is valid for a number of the spheres.
I have experienced it a little bit in the actual play world, but less so. For the most part, our main audience, I'm going to say, is amazing. They are a fantastic community and we love them. Every so often we get weird YouTube comments that is just like, you needed to be angry on the internet for some reason. Okay.
This says more about you than it says about me. Yeah.
Yeah, precisely.
This is not a commentary on our podcast, but on the necessity of availability of therapy in the United States or wherever the commenter may be coming from. You're doing the explainer. There are a few publications out there that are kind of helpful. The Quick Start ain't bad. It's not great. And then you have, for instance, Sebastian Freeman's Believe in Magic, which is just, here's a bunch of places stories can go. What material, he said, asking entirely out of selfishness, do you think should exist that would smooth that on-ramp? Because to me, the three legs of the stool are a simple explanation, an example of play, and a story I can run. What materials do you think could exist to supplement your work that would make it easier to onboard people to the world of darkness, and Mage in particular?
Either some sort of example of play like that, or I'm going to say really basic explanation of, I'm going to say, the mechanics of Paradigm. Because one thing that came up when I was having one of my beta listeners listen to the Paradigm episode that I did, he came back to me with, like, I still have a few questions. Some of the questions are just things like, when you look at Paradigm in the core book or in any of the supplemental books, it doesn't really say how this is kind of used or how you can mix and match them together. There are examples that kind of use that, but it doesn't really explicitly go into the how you take these ideas that are written down and apply them to your character, really. And so I think a slightly better, more in-depth kind of focus on that would probably be a good idea, because that's really where your character comes from, is this how they approach the world, what they believe in the world, and how their magic works.
Do you think it's that the solution to that is we just put together a big book of paradigms, we meaning the mage community or something like that, rather than any of us individually? Is that the solution, or do you think there is this better explanation that would really get it across to people who are new to the game?
When I first saw M20's like list of potential paradigms, as somebody who started with Revised, it really didn't feel right. It felt claustrophobic to me. It felt very, oh, these are the boxes I get to put my character in, because Revised was a lot more develop your paradigm and be creative about it and what your mage believes, right? I've come around on that since then. And to look at a list of paradigm examples, which is now how I have to think about it, because these are just potential examples that you can use and you can mix and match. I think that if there was a opening explanation of how to use the following list of paradigms, I think that would be helpful. And then a list of a bunch of paradigms with some examples, but also examples of like mixed paradigm of someone who believes like everything is data and all man is machine or something like that, like some sort of weird mix of things, but show how it can work. Because I think that's where a lot of people struggle, is if they can't find something that their mage believes in because they have an idea of character in their head. Because some people are really good about that. They have an idea of character and then they look at the paradigms and go, none of these fit. What do I do?
I think part of it is they are very poorly named.
That too.
A mechanistic cosmos includes the Chinese celestial bureaucracy. A world of gods and monsters includes Dickian Gnosticism. Hermeticism is might makes right. It is not quite the case that your choices are only animal, vegetable, or mineral, but I think the names kind of do them a disservice.
And I would, yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah. Periodically, I do this thing where I call Josh Heath in an excited sweat, as we all do. This is how Jen and I know each other, actually.
Mage causes excited sweats.
It does. We know that. And then you call Josh Heath spontaneously, very specifically. It's odd. I don't even know how I got his number. But
why
I'm
is
like,
he on my phone now?
Yeah, like I figured out a flowchart to figure out what your paradigm is. Are you special? Yes, no. Do gods exist? Yes, no. And I could never make an actual flowchart that didn't become circular, which on one level is the most mage thing that you can have.
That really is.
Where it doesn't actually give you an answer and you just asymptotically approach a paradigm, which would be lovely. And then we had Book of Secrets, which is only paradigms that are awkwardly smashed together. And then we had Book of the Fallen, which complicated things by introducing political views as paradigm. Like everyone should get to vote is not a paradigm. It's something I believe in, but it is not the same way that I believe the universe is divine and alive. Those are two kind of, one can kind of stem from the other, but unless you have the spirit of Deimos powering your magic, it's not really a magical paradigm per se. I asked Jen to explain her project, but as all good interviews with mage creators are, it has become therapy for me. So I appreciate that, Jen. But as you mentioned, you've done a bunch of other things. Are there any other projects you've done that you think a mage in Old World of Darkness general audience would be interested in addition to Paradox?
As I've mentioned, a lot of people may not like actual plays, but I do play in Dork Tales, which does a variety of things. A lot of their stuff is D&D, but we do have the Victorian era mage game that's been running for a couple of years, and it's absolutely fantastic. And we have Technocracy Zero Sum, which I run, which is great, and we do a bunch of one shots as well. Right? Thank you.
Yeah.
I like naming things.
Nice.
There may be, we haven't announced it yet, so I'm not going to announce it here because I don't know when this is coming out exactly. There is going to be another World of Darkness game starting soon in January. That's going to be very exciting. And that's going to, if I recall correctly, run on Wednesday nights. And it's going to be a long one. We like our long stories sometimes.
Last question. Opportunity pops up. You are tapped to say, what should the last book for M20 be? What do you think that book should be? You get to add one book to the canon. You don't have to write the darn thing, but you kind of need to have at least a thumbnail sketch outline of it.
This is going to make probably half to three quarters of your audience hate me. A Guide to the Metaplot.
We don't believe in edition wars here. As George Takei said, Star Trek and Star Wars fans need to learn to coexist in the world so we can fight back sparkly vampires. There aren't enough mage fans to divide along those cleavages. So
this is true.
So
I do know a lot of people have very strong opinions about the metaplot and what parts they like about it versus what parts they don't. And that's fine. Again, your storyteller is the be-all and end-all, basically. I love the metaplot. I love using the metaplot in games I run. But I know it's not for everyone. However, I would love a guide to the metaplot because rifling through wikis is impossible sometimes.
Thank you so much for joining us, Jen. If people are interested, paradoxmagepodcast.podbean.com or Paradox in the podcatcher of your choice. I list the Podbean link because there are a lot of things out there called Paradox. So even Mage the Podcast doesn't really narrow it down in the podcast-averse. So sometimes having something else to grab onto would be useful. The link to Dork Tales and their work and the games that Jen had mentioned will also be in our show notes. Jen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed this.
And now here's a sample episode of the Paradox Project by Jen Peters about the Umbra.
This is Jen, and you're listening to Paradox, a Mage the Ascension podcast. These bite-sized episodes are designed to get you up to speed and comfortable with Mage the Ascension rules and concepts. Reread the books so you don't have to, though we do recommend it. Without further ado, welcome to Paradox. Welcome to episode 13 on the auspicious date of Friday, October 13th. I want to say thanks for bearing with me as I had COVID and lost my voice and couldn't get another episode out a couple weeks ago. I didn't mean for episode 13 to actually come out on this day, as I had originally planned to talk about the correspondence sphere first, but this feels like a happy coincidence. What wasn't a coincidence, however, was the topic for this episode, the mage cosmology. If you're unfamiliar with the idea of a cosmology, it basically just means the structure and evolution of the universe, in this case from the perspective of Mage the Ascension. As the World of Darkness is our world, but worse in many ways, a lot of its overarching cosmology is similar to ours, and all of the settings within the World of Darkness share one cosmology, they just each look at it from a different angle. We're going to focus on the mage mindset for this episode, as it is the one that matters most for our purposes, but there will be references to Werewolf the Apocalypse, as the mage cosmology was built upon the werewolf one, and there may be mentions of other lines when those crossover points come up. The reason for putting this episode so early with all of its new vocabulary that we will define as we go along is because the next episode will be focused on the sphere of spirit magic, or dimensional science for the technocrats out there. And that sphere requires at least a semi-solid grounding in the basics of the overarching mage cosmology. With all that being said, welcome once again to episode 13, Reality Check. To start, let's talk a bit about the terminology that will be used in this episode. Mage is a game of infinite possibility, and therefore it is also a game of overlapping, clashing, and inconsistent worldviews. Often, these worldviews have different terminology for things, or, even better, use the same words to mean different things. Not only that, but the World of Darkness sourcebooks, not just Mage, have a tendency to be internally inconsistent as well. Now, this could be explained as having a large setting, multiple writers, and new editions that contradicted older editions, or we could look at it as a messy existing setting where we can take what suits us and leave the rest. You don't need to know everything in order to run a World of Darkness game, or even use any of it at all, but it's there if you want it. That all being said, the mage cosmology can be incredibly confusing. For this episode, we will be using specific terms and definitions as we understand them, and if that clashes with your idea of the mage cosmology, we can agree to disagree. Speaking of confusing concepts, the mage cosmology doesn't fit neatly into how many people view our world. Here, our senses tell us about three main dimensions, four if you include time. While this episode will attempt to categorize the reality of the World of Darkness into those four dimensions, and it is perfectly reasonable to continue thinking of reality that way, it may benefit your understanding if you acknowledge that not only is our reality complex, but adding in a supernatural component makes the complexity explode exponentially. Directionality in this case is an exercise in futility, but many of the terms used to describe the mage cosmology use words like higher or lower. And if that evokes a sense of one realm being above or below another, that's reasonable, if potentially incorrect. In the Mage the Ascension world, all of reality is referred to as the Tellurian. It encompasses all dimensions, realms, planes, and levels of existence, both known and unknown. The Tellurian is the stage upon which the Ascension War is fought and where mages manipulate, explore, and seek to understand the nature of reality. The word Tellurian refers to a mechanical model for demonstrating the rotation and orbit of the Earth, and most mages use this as a metaphor for all reality, what is, what was, what will be, or might be, and even what could be. Which brings me to the tapestry. The tapestry is often described as the weave of reality. It represents the intricate and interconnected fabric of existence that encompasses the entire Tellurian. Every aspect of existence is woven together with every possibility, and it is the mage who can tug threads back and forth or cut and rearrange them as they see fit. Or, well, as much as consensus and paradox will allow them to. Of course, due to this effect on the tapestry, mages also affect the overall cosmology, as there is the potential to create new realms, as many mages have done according to the historical metaplot. However, there are enough realms to talk about already without going into any of the new ones that may or may not be created by enterprising mages, so it's easiest to start with what we know. In this case, that would be Earth, our physical reality. The Earth is separated from other realms by a metaphysical barrier called the Gauntlet. Many of the other realms have their own gauntlets, but Earth's is the one most mages will be concerned with. Back when there was more mystery around, you could enter the spirit world from any particularly wild or mystical location like the American frontier, or deep in any cave or forest, or by metaphorically falling off the edge of the world. These places are all examples of shallowings, areas where the gauntlet between the Earth and everywhere else is paper thin. These shallowings still exist in the modern world, but they are few and far between, and either have mythic ties, or are in places humans rarely venture, like the deepest depths of the ocean. The gauntlet waxes and wanes over the centuries, and often from location to location, but the last 200 years have seen a stiffening of the spiritual barrier, most likely related to the increasing influence of the technocratic paradigm. As well, if you choose to include it in your chronicle, the gauntlet is home to the Avatar Storm, or dimensional anomaly, if you're a technocrat. The storm has a lot of history, both in the setting and in the real-world development of the books, but suffice it to say that it can make crossing the gauntlet much more difficult. Just across the gauntlet is what is known as the penumbra. This is considered Earth's shadow or reflection, and it's where all the other umbral realms have a connection to Earth. If one were to use their senses to look across the gauntlet, such as to see spirits, they would see the spirit world as it overlays Earth. Someone could potentially do this with mind or entropy should they wish to see specifically the high or low umbrae, the astral reaches or underworld respectively, and how those realms overlap Earth as well. However, for the most part, you would actually be using the spirit sphere to see those as well. It's just, if you want to be particularly creative, you could make an argument for mind or entropy. If one does manage to cross the gauntlet, and there are plenty of ways to cross with minimal issue depending on which realm you're attempting to go to, then by default one would end up in this penumbra, which the books sometimes refer to in the plural as if each realm has its own penumbra, which may or may not be accurate. If you go further than the penumbra, you can explore the near umbra, which is comprised of three locations, mostly. While, as mentioned, it's impossible to really assign a direction as we know it to any of these, they are often known as the high, middle, and low or dark umbra. Their alternative names are the astral reaches for the high umbra, the spirit wilds for the middle umbra, and the underworld for the low umbra. And those are the names we will use here, so there is hopefully less confusion. The astral reaches are the spiritual realms of abstract thought and concepts. It's a land of metaphors and platonic forms and is most easily accessed by the mind sphere, as moving into the astral reaches physically is possible, but can cause you some problems with your physical pattern existing in such an abstract space. While traveling astrally, your physical stats are replaced by your mental ones and willpower is used as your health. Astral time does not flow the same way as it does in the real world, as it depends more on your state of mind than the actual concept of time. If you've ever been focused intently on something and found that time sped by without you noticing it, it's a similar idea in the astral reaches. As one moves further into the reaches, or if you prefer, as you progress upwards, you move from simple and general concepts into the abstract and narrow. The middle umbra, or spirit wilds, is one of the most utilized umbral realms as it is relevant to the spirit sphere in Mage, as well as to the entire setting of Werewolf the Apocalypse. While the high and low umbrae have a somewhat hierarchical design, understanding still that directionality is all but impossible to substantiate, the middle umbra goes outwards or sideways, which leads to the term stepping sideways, used by both the Garu, the werewolves in Werewolf the Apocalypse, and mages alike. The middle umbra contains 13 individual and distinct realms, collectively known as the near realms, ranging from Panagia, a primal reflection of Earth as it was before civilization and even human history, to the Atrocity Realm or the Wasteland, which is where the worst cruelties and tortures have been immortalized, or Cyber Realm, known as Dystopia to mages, where the constructs of the Weaver, a great spirit that I will explain momentarily, have run amok, building a vast and powerful reflection of the Information Age with areas like the Pit, an underworld of discarded dreams, or the Computer Web, where raw data is embodied in spirit form. In anticipation of the next episode of Paradox, a brief overview of spirits themselves is warranted. Spirits are disembodied entities that originate in and usually dwell in the Umbra, and for that reason, some mages call them the Umbrood. Wraiths and demons are considered more specialized types of spirits, and many references to spirits specifically do not include these two types of beings. Spirits can occasionally materialize in the physical world or bind themselves to a mortal via possession. There are plenty of write-ups on spirits, both from the werewolf and the mage perspectives, which are edition-dependent, but the gist is that most things have a spirit, even if they aren't sentient beings. There are spirits of hatred, blood, technology, electricity, death, joy, depression, family, or even elemental spirits of fire, air, water, earth, and even wood or metal. Of course, there are many other potential types of spirits. They generally have abilities based on their overall nature, and they can be found in the penumbra as reflections of the physical world, or deeper in the umbral realms, though the ones you find in those depths are often the more powerful cousins of the penumbra ones. Werewolf the Apocalypse presents the mythology of the Triad, the three greatest entities in the spiritual hierarchy that are responsible for the creation, preservation, and destruction of all things. Of course, opinions differ and stories are contradictory, but as they are occasionally referenced in the mage setting, there is merit in discussing them. The Triad provides balance between the creation of chaos by the wild, the preservation of order, form, and function by the weaver, and the destruction of the worm. According to the stories, these three are out of balance in the modern world, leading to an upswing in the worm's power, bringing the apocalypse ever closer. Most mages, even those well-versed in spirit magic or dimensional science, won't be encountering or dealing with the Triad or truly any extremely powerful spirits. However, if a storyteller wishes to delve into that world, perhaps with werewolf NPCs or a chronicle that spends a lot of time across the gauntlet, the werewolf supplements are a great addition to the mage books for expanding your understanding of those entities. Moving on to other Umbro realms, fundamentally, the underworld is composed of memories. It is the domain of the dead and is the setting for Wraith the Oblivion, unless you would prefer to leave Wraith out of your game, in which case you could model a more mage-centric underworld after the Astral Reaches or Spirit Wilds, but with a more entropic leaning. The underworld is where dead people, and only people, sometimes go. It's a place of memory and dissolution, so like the High Umbra, it has a hierarchy of slices, and like the Middle Umbra, it gets progressively more messed up the farther away from the gauntlet, which is also known as the shroud, that you get. At the metaphysical bottom of reality is Oblivion, a gnawing hole comprised of entropy itself, which is a constantly churning force of destruction and madness that is patient and enduring, simply waiting for all of existence to come to it, as it eventually will. In addition to these realms in the Near Umbra, there are independent regions that exist between and across and operate with completely unique physics and laws that set them apart from the others. These regions are called zones. Some are visited on a nearly casual basis, other zones are more difficult to reach, and some can only be seen from the outside but not entered, while others seem to operate in completely random patterns with regard to accessibility. Without going into deep detail about all of the zones, two of the known ones are more prominent than the others, though of course it is up to the storyteller whether to put focus on any of the zones at all. These zones are the Dreaming, which is more relevant to the Changeling the Dreaming line than Mage, and the Digital Web, which was developed by the Virtual Adepts. The Dreaming is generally considered a zone by mages, but could be considered a realm of its own with Arcadia, the home of the Fae, in the middle. The second edition mage supplement, Beyond the Barriers, the Book of Worlds, also gives a description of the Maya, or the Dream Realm, which M20 states contains the Dreaming. However, the descriptions have never matched up. As with dreams themselves, the short descriptions provided by the books can be interpreted in many ways, and the final call is, as always, ultimately up to the storyteller. The Digital Web is likely the most utilized zone in all of Mage, in games set in the modern age anyway. Alan Turing, canonically part of the Virtual Adepts in the World of Darkness, developed a simulated reality and projected his avatar into it via a telephone line. Something went wrong, with theories ranging from there being an error in his calculations to an assassination by technocrats while his mind was absent, and he died. However, his death transformed the simulation into an early version of the Digital Web and caused the Virtual Adepts to flee the technocracy for good. A mage or technocrat can visit the Digital Web with their senses through tools like virtual reality gear. They can visit astrally using the correspondence sphere to shift their senses that way, or they can wholly translate themselves into the Digital Web and leave no physical body behind in the physical world, or what virtual adepts tend to refer to as meat space. Much like the gauntlet separates the material world from the Near Umbra, another barrier called the Horizon separates the Near Umbra from the areas beyond. This bit gets a little confusing with mage naming conventions yet again, because there are two barriers known as the First Horizon and the Far Horizon, for some reason. And the space between them is sometimes called the True Horizon. Let me try to explain. The limit of physical reality used to be the Earth's atmosphere. You didn't have to go adventuring to slip through a shallowing. You could also just go up. Mundane space didn't exist at all until the technocracy encouraged sleeper scientists to probe, investigate, and publish about it, leading to consensus and the gauntlet expanding outwards. This split the undifferentiated umbra outside of the Earth's atmosphere, that delimiter becoming known as the First Horizon, into the vacuum of space in physical reality on one side and its umbra reflection in the other. This region of the Spirit Wilds or Middle Umbra is commonly referred to as Aether Space, or more confusingly, the True Horizon. The expansion slash division of space in this way only extended to the solar system's inner planets, though. The asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter became a second horizon, the Far Horizon. Beyond the asteroid belt in both physical space and ether space is the undifferentiated deep umbra. In ether space, one can find several shard realms and so-called horizon realms, since mages really like naming everything with horizon. These shard realms are umbra realms that are connected to one of the nine spheres of magic and map physically to one of the planets, even Pluto. Each shard realm also has a corresponding shade realm that manifests within that first horizon, like a shadow. At least that's the way M20 describes it. Revised restricted shade realms and made them only reachable from the corresponding shard realm, so the choice is yours for how you treat them. Horizon Realms are pocket universes that require a connection to a node on Earth, as they must be supplied with quintessence in order to sustain their existence. A node is a natural wellspring of quintessence, so it provides an easy supply to the realm. The most well-known Horizon Realms include Horizon, a stronghold for the Nine Traditions that was built in the 1450s and acted much like the United Nations for mages, as well as Balador, which was the pride and joy of the Cult of Ecstasy, and Ardocathonia, the off-world home of the Iteration X. Many of these realms were destroyed or unmoored when the Avatar Storm hit, if you subscribe to that metaplot, and those who were there eventually became disembodied spirits. However, if you are running a game without the Avatar Storm, they may still exist. Beyond the far horizon lies the Deep Umbra, an immense void with few touch points for mages or technocrats to hold onto. There are, of course, the remaining Shard and Shade realms that map to the rest of the planets, and the Void Engineers created one of their main bases, the Copernicus Research Center, also known as the COP, in the Deep Umbra to monitor for extraterrestrial threats. Otherwise, the Deep Umbra is home to strange alien creatures, weird space things, and some marauders and Nefandi. Sometimes classified in relation to the Deep Umbra, but which are really a thing of their own, there are also Paradox realms. These are private realms created by the extensive paradox accumulated in a particularly vulgar mage. They often take on forms related to the offense that triggered them. The Technocracy follows a different theory of the universe, developed by Tycoides, the founder of the modern Void Engineers, in order to explain the spiritual dimension in terms of enlightened science. According to this Tycoidean cosmology, the cosmos acts as a hypercomputer that is able to generate infinite continuous processing, which sentient beings can tap into and use to generate their own reality models. What this mostly means is that the Technocracy explains the varying umbral realms by believing in the reality of conventional space, which is the area perceivable by the masses and regular science up to the asteroid belt, and that any phenomena that occur outside of consensus fall into subdimensions that the Void Engineers believe represent mathematical shadows of accepted aspects of reality. While each subdimension has its own technocratic explanation, they map directly to the same umbral realms that mages observe, just with different names. The astral reaches are called ensemble space, the spirit wilds are called biospheric space, the underworld is called entropic space. The first horizon is known as the biospheric horizon, while the far horizon is the spatial horizon, and the space between them, the reflection of conventional space, is known as subspace, and is home to several quantum dimensions, which mages know as shard realms. The Deep Umbra is known as the Deep Universe to technocrats, and it's a place where consensus reality stops existing, leading to paradox targeting technocrats more than mages. Zones, as mages call them, create an interesting problem for technocrats, which they have solved by calling them Everett volumes, based probably off of the many worlds interpretation in quantum mechanics proposed by Hugh Everett in 1957. Essentially, it's one of the many multiverse hypotheses. However, there is one zone that technocrats and mages somewhat agree upon, the digital web, especially as it became more and more integrated into consensus. So today we've embarked on a long but incomplete journey through the labyrinthine cosmos of Mage the Ascension. In this mystical odyssey, we've unraveled the complex terminology and interwoven concepts of a world where belief and intention shape the very fabric of reality. As mages and storytellers, we are invited to navigate this boundless realm of infinite possibilities, all while recognizing that the mage cosmology doesn't neatly align with our conventional understanding of the universe. As we move forward in our exploration of Mage the Ascension, remember that the cosmos is a place of endless wonder and complexity. The Tellurian, the Tapestry, and the Gauntlet are just the beginning of a journey filled with realms, magic, and potential. So, dear mages and seekers of the arcane, continue your exploration, question everything, and keep the magic alive. We'll be back soon with more tales from the magical cosmos. Until then, may your reality be ever expansive, and may you find magic in the most unexpected places. Happy Friday the 13th, and stay tuned for more adventures beyond the Gauntlet. You've been listening to Paradox, a Mage the Ascension podcast, and you can find us wherever you can find podcasts. If actual plays are up your alley, check out Dork Tales on twitch.tv/dorktales or youtube.com/dorktales. Find us on the Dork Tales Discord server or check out our website at dorktales.ca. We are currently streaming a Mage the Victorian Era game on Saturdays. Our Patreon subscribers have early access to the Technocracy Zero-Sum game, which is also starting to roll out on YouTube for the general public. And we have several Mage one-shots and a short-run chronicle called Breaking Tradition on YouTube. Additionally, we are starting to roll out our Mage the Victorian Era game in podcast form over on the Dork Tales Podbean channel, also found wherever you can find podcasts. Finally, as always, there's also all of our other amazing content. Thanks for listening, and remember to always keep your magic coincidental, unless it's Fireball.
Again, if you enjoyed that, please search Paradox on Podbean. This has been Mage the Podcast, where we thank you all for starting with Mage 201 when there never really was a Mage 101. This episode was made possible by Ben Bendelow, Oracle of the Paradigm Alien Makes Us Who We Are, because Ridley Scott's masterful directing is an inspiration to every mage. Buck Gregory, Oracle of the Paradigm All Power Comes From Cod, that nutritious, dense, flaky white fish. Christopher Phillips, Oracle of the Paradigm of All the World's a Stage, and we can only do magic when the Stagehands Union says that we can. Guy Stewart, Oracle of the Paradigm, Ancient Wisdom is the Key. What lock it fits, I'm not sure. Jay Widener, Oracle of the Paradigm, Consciousness is the Only True Reality, which, I mean, is technically true. I don't really see what they're trying to do. Josh Hillerup, Oracle of the Paradigm, Embrace the Threshold, which gives you exceptional powers to hold onto doorframes. Mikhail, Oracle of the Paradigm of a Holographic Reality, which was really big in the 70s when there was over 500 holographic museum exhibits, and it's kind of just faded from then. Pukaji, Oracle of the Paradigm, Transcend Your Limits, which is fine until Paradox takes the form of plentiful speeding tickets. Sean Gallagher, Oracle of the Paradigm, Turning the Keys to Reality, which is literally what magic is. Again, these paradigms are terribly named. And finally, the Crew of Erebus, Oracle of the Paradigm, We Are Not Men, which was originally We Are Not Men, We Are Devo, but was cut because there wasn't enough space. Also thanks to Archmaster Andrew Edelstein, Archmaster Brad the Blue, Archmaster Dan Svensson, Archmaster Derek Simsek, Archmaster Leroy Bryce, Archmaster Morgan Aron, Archmaster Nathan Weaver, Alex Alexia, Ambiversion, Andrew S. Anon, Bedurfi, Birdo, Blaze Hibbert, Blake Ryan, Brandon, Bryce Perry, Bubba the Pale One, Chris Blake, Sin Shotis, Daniel Cuppin, Daniel Scrimder, Darren Hennessy, David Roy, Dennis Osborne, Eli Levenger, Eric Schwenk, Frager Rock, Friedrich Owl, George Laura, Henry Kraft, Eobold, Jason Kennedy, Jason Vines, Jason W. Briggs, Jay Gatsby, Jeff Brin, Jenna F., Jervis Johnson, John Magnuson, Jolyn Andes, Lulz and Stuff, Joshua Heath, Kathleen Halperin, Chris Kinner, Leslie Weatherstone, Matthew Poyle, Michael Creedle, Michael Parker, Nibero, Neil Patterson, Nikita Klimanov, Oliver Schindler, Patrick McNamara, Patrick Mulder, Rachel Grace, Richard Bat Brewster, Robart the Robot, Rubem Joseph, Ryan Stray, Rob H., Ryan Kennedy, Samuel Tobin, Starfish, Stephen Carton, Thrace Great, Vincent Hamilton, Walter, William Connolly, and William Martin. Our EP shoutout this week is to Jervis Johnson, who makes me think of Port Jarvis, the town at the confluence of the Neversink and Delaware Rivers. Neversink is a corruption of an Algonquin word meaning Manned River. It is also the location where dry fly fishing was invented. Hot Cha. Originally named Mackahamack, it was burned down by the joint efforts of the British and the Mohawk in 1779, was slowly rebuilt over two decades. It was eventually incorporated as a village in 1953, and it became a full-fledged town in 1907. It reached its peak population in 1930 and has been slowly shrinking since. Port Jarvis contains the Tri-State Monument, which I was really hoping was haunted, but it just seems to be a stone block celebrating where Pennsylvania, New York, and New Jersey come together. It is also very near the obelisk marking the highest point in New Jersey across the river, which is also, sadly, not haunted. When I think of unassuming stone markers, though, I'll think of Jervis Johnson. If you'd rather listen on YouTube, search Mates the Podcast on YouTube to find our full library there. If you super liked this episode or super didn't, drop us a line at matesthepodcast@gmail.com or at matesthepodcast on Twitter. We have a hop in Discord community at discord.me/matesthepodcast. Mates the Podcast is also on Mastodon at dice.camp/@matesthepodcast. If you like us, please give us a review on the platform of your choosing or tell a friend about us. Also go to matesthepodcast.com for show notes and all of our previous shows. Now go change reality. Bye.